Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the show. I'm Andy Griffin. This is the Andy Griffin Show on KDXU. Now, I have been out the last 3 days, and those of you that are acute listeners, people maybe very observant, know that the last three shows, although I have been on the air, there were replays. And so, in fact, I was told Zach Renstrom, who was the original scheduled guest yesterday, was supposed to be on yesterday. He was. It just wasn't live Zach Renstrom. It was pre-taped, pre-recorded Zach Renstrom. Anyway, I'm Andy, and I am live, and so is Bill Hoster, the mayor of Leeds. He's with me right now. Bill, how you doing, man?
Good, Andy. Thank you for having me today.
Well, thanks for coming, man. I really appreciate you being here. I know there were a couple people like, he's been too sick. He can't get a guest in time, but I called one of my old friends, Bill, and said, Bill, come bail me out, man.
I'll take care of you anytime, my friend. Yes.
I appreciate you doing that. Exciting stuff. Interesting stuff happening in Leeds. So let's start though with the fire department. You are the chairman, right, of the Hurricane Valley
Fire Board.
Yep. Fire Board.
Yep.
And you guys, actually, I think last time you were on, you came on and started talking about the money that you needed.
Right. Yeah, it was right before the legislative session. We had to do a public hearing to do a tax truth and taxation. Mm-hmm. And that was just a parachute we thought we wouldn't really need. We were really affirmed that this tax, sales tax, would go through the legislative session without a problem. And so, but we had a little gut set, feeling to say, you know, say, hey, let's build a parachute. So we did. And I'm so glad, that we trusted that, that feeling, because at the legislative session, I don't know if it could have been written any better, for television, but it was at the, 11:59.
Literally 1 minute to close of session.
And they ran it across from the House over back over to the Senate for
Now, when you say, did a human, one of the aides actually had it in his hand and ran?
Literally sprinted, texting me, gosh. I'm running over there right now.
Wow.
Handing it to Speaker, President Adams, and then President Adams read the portion that was supposed to be amended and then said, oh, we are out of time, and closed the session. So we didn't get it.
Man.
We didn't get it.
And what does that mean for the money you needed? And what does that mean for Hurricane Valley Fire?
So fortunately, you know, like I said, we did do the truth and taxation. So that could go into effect in June. I'm a little premature in saying that we've talked with our legislatures about a special session that could occur in May. And if that does occur, we're asking to be on that agenda and see if we can. Because, Andy, we have almost 10.5 million visitors down here every year who can help us shoulder the cost of that fire and EMS, because they consume at least 35-40% of the call volume that we're on standby for or responding to or treating. And so
more than a third of all calls you get are from people who don't live here.
Right. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
we have that many people coming in and using our services. So we'd rather not put it on the property tax owners, to pay, and put it on to, the tourists who are coming through and, having those services for everyone.
Seems kind of logical, but you
it
know,
does,
as we found in politics, logic does not always win.
yes. Yeah, politics 101, my friend.
So what does that mean for the future of things?
So for the future of things, the fire department's great. Everyone still has their job. We're not going to be out hunting for new paramedics or anything soon. So that's good. Things are going to be status quo for the next year. We'll apply again next year if we don't get this special session, and see what we can do there. In the past, they didn't do property tax increases at all. So we had to do a slight increase. It's 0.0062% of your property tax. And it was an increase of that. So it wasn't significant per household, but it was enough to keep the fire department running status quo. Mm. And, we'll be able to do that, this next year without a problem, because we did take that action.
I know there are people listening that live in, say, I live in Leeds or Leverkin or Springdale. The first thing on their mind is, what does that mean as far as response time? If I need an EMS, or a fire truck, mm-hmm. how long is it going to take them to get to me?
No, normal response times. We are not shutting any stations. We're not losing any personnel. So services will be as they have been, which our response times are really good. So there's this thing called an ISO, and it's relevant to your insurance ratings.
Mm-hmm.
We actually just improved ours to, I wish the chief were here to tell me. I think it's down to a 4, if I'm not mistaken, 6 or 4, which is really good. So actually that price increase, and for all of our listeners, if you're in my district, I'm hoping you're calling your homeowner's insurance after April and letting them know that you just got a new ISO rating and for them to make an adjustment to your home insurance, because it should be going down now.
Although, with all due respect to our insurance agents out there, I've never seen them actually knock anything down.
Well, okay, so let's talk about that.
All right, yeah okay, convince me.
No,
change my mind, as the sign says online, right?
So USA Today came out with an article a couple months ago. I'm not sure if you got to see it, about what's happening across the country, and it was relevant to the fires that happened over in Palisades and mm-hmm. The hurricanes that happened over in Florida. And so insurance companies.
And by the way, that's how they say it in Florida, hurricane.
Hurricane, yeah.
They do. We say it here that way. In Florida, they say that. And in England, they say it that way. But the rest of the world calls them hurricanes.
Right? Yes, you're right. So as a result of that, they have identified critical zones. And okay. And they are raising those rates significantly. They did it in California. And that area in Los Angeles County that was hit, they had raised those rates. And the legislative body came in and said, well, you can't raise them this high. We're going to restrict you, which, by the way, I am adamantly opposed to any government trying to come in and regulate a private business. So,
right.
So
like
was
the minimum wage.
Right. yeah. And so was the insurance company. So the insurance company said, all right, well, we're out of here then. And that's what happened to all those people that did not get or have insurance when the Palisade fires came through.
Right.
So we're trying not to do that in the state of Utah, but I believe it is over 38%, 40% of Washington County falls into a critical fire zone.
Really?
Yeah. So your house could be sitting in a neighborhood and it's still in a critical fire zone, and your homeowner's insurance could be doubling this next year. Ours did. In Leeds, we've got so many people that are either getting dropped right now or their insurance is doubling, trying to find another carrier. And that is happening all throughout Washington County, not just my fire district. So even in, you know, almost downtown St. George, which you would think is crazy, right? But we're kind of in that assessment from the insurance companies that, well, you have high winds, you're near trees, you know, whatever is their formula. We are trying to, as a state legislatures, identify, hey, look, we've taken these measures. Would you use our map instead of, and we're not trying to dictate to private industry what they should and shouldn't do, but we are trying to legislate. Our map has this data that yours doesn't. And mm-hmm. so you should fairly be assessing onto the citizens their insurance rates from this.
Have they had any response to that? Are they going to do that?
I don't know what has happened yet so far, but that's been the efforts. And but you and your neighbors are starting to see the insurance rates already double or drop right now.
And that's sad, because Utah has long been known for having pretty low property tax rates. And
property tax, but not homeowners insurance. That's
right,
the one.
That's true. But I know there are people that move out of certain states, like California, because of the property tax rates.
Yes,
and
yes.
Insurance rates and
utility rates. It's far better place to live. If you're listening and live here, that's great. Don't share that secret with anybody else. But
our dirty little secret.
But you know, the efforts that we're trying to make legislatively is to not try and kick the insurance companies out. You know, we need them. But we want to try and be able to have business fairly done. They do kind of own, you know, that insurance industry.
Right.
And so there is some efforts that might need to be done at the federal level to try and help us to do those things. So it's a pretty stacked cake, Andy, but I think we're going to be able to make some headway here over the next little while.
Do you know the rest of the story on California? Are they, with the insurance and the Palisades fire and all that stuff, were they allowed to leave and just say the heck with it?
Yeah.
They were?
Yeah, and that's what they did. So there were many, many homes that had no insurance. And so now the federal government is having to bail them out. Mm-hmm. And that is when I believe you start to see legislation come back and say, okay, what do we do in changing this and working with the insurance companies? Because quite honestly, you know, most of those insurance companies are insured by insurance companies. And then there's just this small little gap right up top that needs to work with Congress and trying to resolve the issue.
For those that don't know, Bill Hoster is the mayor of Leeds. He's also a staunch conservative.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
And I don't want to be mean, but you're not a quiet one either. You're a guy who is willing to speak his mind. And I mean, there are a lot of staunch conservatives that are pretty quiet about
I'll
it.
I'll wear a MAGA hat.
You will.
I will.
And you get quoted often in newspaper and other website reports on different kinds of things. And it's kind of refreshing, Bill, because in a public position as a mayor of a town, you could, you know, be a little bit of a wallflower and kind of sit back and not make those bold statements. Do you feel like sometimes you get in trouble for saying too much?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I did kind of think that was an option to sit as a wallflower. And as you saw, you know, Andy, we started, Washington County started to be in the crosshairs of liberal woke agendas, you know, and we saw the We're Here from HBO come in and try to do their performances, which is fine, but not in front of kids. And so we all stepped up and we started writing legislation for that. We also started to get involved with different activities that are associated with the school board or with our elected officials. And just this past weekend, I got elected onto the SEC for the state central committee, wherein Republican Party platform is controlled by that committee on their bylaws and trying to get true conservative persons that agree with those bylaws to get elected and trying to vet those people out and get them into the right position. So, yeah, we can be a wallflower or we can really climb in with both feet. I chose the other. And so I do that. I've also, you know, been, as you saw, kind of caught in the crosshair with some of the growth that we have happening up in Leeds. Sure. And so as a true conservative, I believe in the law. You know, I believe in the Constitution and I'll stand up for property rights. And I was heavily criticized for that. I had some people who just didn't want neighbors. And the stories that were hitting like KUTV and a couple of these were clickbait.
Let me quote one of them. It was they wouldn't let us graze our cattle here because it was endangered tortoise land, and now you're building houses. How do you do that?
Yeah,
that was the overriding theme, basically.
Yeah, it was kind of like trying to pull a Clive Bundy here. It wasn't a Clive Bundy thing
no.
at all. So I actually spoke with Congresswoman Malloy's office and a couple of others with that because. And I'm not in the know of all of these things. It happened 30 years ago. So
long before you lived here.
Long before I lived here. Yeah. And a pedigree was done of the title, which, you know, that's record. And they found that wasn't on the same land. It was the tortoise reserve is still there, by the way. So there was private property owners that had sold that land. They still own much of that land there right now. Same property owners. So, you know, that did come out, but it was after the bulldozers that were permitted with their zoning 10 years ago finally started to cut some roads. Someone came up with that story. And so, you know, it's something that, and unfortunately, you know, on social media and these things today, people just see the one little thing and then they believe if it rhymes with what they're thinking, right?
Sounds like that might be true. Yeah.
All of a sudden the news is right, you know, and then, other times it's fake news. And so how do you, other than trying to talk to the person? And so I try to be vocal, but without, you never win an argument, right? And so I try to put out the truth and then let people make their own decisions, but sometimes they don't want to read the truth.
An argument is usually two people that have already made up their minds trying to convince the other one, and it doesn't happen hardly ever.
Nope.
So, All right, tell us about the development then a little bit. They're going to be, they're originally going to be like, what, 2,000 homes?
2,200,
2,200,
yeah.
But that's different now.
Yes, sir, yes. We worked really well with that developer in Leeds. So this property was outside of Leeds, and 10 years ago they annexed in, and we're going to do 2,200 homes. They were permitted for that.
And this is north of town?
Correct. Yeah, okay. On its way out to Babylon there. And so the developer, it's been sold twice since then. New developer came in and said, hey, we really want to work with the town. Let's look at your general plan and how can we do that. And got it down to 740 from 2,200. Really great working with them to do that. And the plan that they've got all set out. But it's still unfortunate the way that our transportation works in Leeds. You got to go up and down Main Street to get on and off the interstate.
Yeah.
People live on Main Street. Kids live on Main Street. And so 740 new homes, that's probably, you know, about 2,100 new cars that are going to be driving up and down Main Street. So been working really close with UDOT, with our county commissioners and with the state to try and get a new interchange that should be about a mile north that will accommodate that growth. But we're not the only growth. In fact, what's kind of funny is, I guess ironic, I should say, is our growth is the smallest that's coming in. And we've managed it incredibly well, I believe, with the developer. You look at Firelight, that's going to be coming up above that. It's 4,000 rooftops. There's another one that's Solera, should be around 1,600 to 2,000 rooftops that's north of there. There's another one that I just learned about that's up by Anderson Junction that should be around 500 to 700.
Really?
Yeah. You know, and this is over a 10-year plan. Some of them are within three. But we've
3 years.
Yeah, and a lot of them sit in the county or other areas, and so we've, I think, handled things really well in Leeds. Leeds is going to remain beautiful, and I'm excited for that because that's why people move there.
That a lot of that, we were talking earlier about Hurricane Valley fire.
Yeah,
a lot of that is going to go right into what you guys have to do.
It is, yeah. So we actually have fire stations that are in those plans to be put in for those developments. Yeah, so we'll be expanding for sure.
That is unbelievable. All right, is there a timeline on the 700? How'd you mean 720?
740.
740. And then is there some commercial to go with that, stores or whatever?
Yeah, so along that frontage road, they are looking at trying to do, it is zoned commercial right now. And some of it's in the county, some of it's not. In fact, we just had a meeting last night about either like mixed use or village commercial zoning so that they can annex the rest in and do what they have in mind. And they actually want to kind of do a walk shop area. Which I think will be,
that'd be fun. Yeah.
Gorgeous. Yeah. There's some here in St. George that are gorgeous and they want to kind of replicate that model there where the store's on the bottom, maybe some residential up on top. And, that should be, something that we'll address over the next month, but I'm hoping comes to fruition.
That would be neat. I mean, if you look at the one that really pops into my mind is the Farmstead with the apartments above it right here downtown. And
exactly.
Incredibly successful,
yeah.
I believe. I mean, we actually went to have lunch at Farmstead the other day. Line was so long. It was like, I know Chris Connors. He's the owner.
Yes.
Like, hey, Chris, thanks anyway, but I'm out of here. I'm not waiting in line for however long it takes.
Well, their bakery's in Leeds. You know,
they have one in Leeds now, don't they?
Well, their main bakery is, yeah.
The big 40, I don't know how big it is.
It's big.
Giant warehouse. Yes. They put it together. And they have now a storefront in Springdale. I think they just opened one in Hurricane, didn't they? Or they're about to?
I did see that, yeah.
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 And, yeah.
It's a great place.
Talk about a great success story.
Yeah, right? What a good company.
Yeah, absolutely. I asked about timeline. You said you're not sure 3 years though, maybe on some of them, the early quick ones or not really.
Well, you know, they're cutting roads in ours. Yeah. And as far as the others, I sit on the, on a couple of boards and calls that occur with the other developers. And so, you know, they all speculate and they're waiting on different things. And, I could tell you with ours, that they're in such good position right now that they're going to phase this out that I believe their project's probably going to be done in 5 years.
Okay. Now, I met your wife, right? You brought her in one time?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you tell her at one point, honey, I'm going to retire? Because you don't sound very retired to me, though.
She's like, why are you doing this? Yeah. You know, why take... Because I volunteer, as you know. This is all volunteer for me. I don't get paid for any of this.
Big old fat salary that you get.
Yes.
You know, nothing.
It's service, 100%. I really care about all the people in our town and around the area, you know, who they have needs. And if I can help out, I will. And so, but she looks at that and she's like, why are you doing this? You on top of, you know, all the time and boy, it's not just showing up at a city council meeting. I promise you that. It's many, many hours before that and after and drinking from a fire hose of, you know, learning different things. And so, but, you know, you get all the hate on top of it on social media or the phone calls or the, you know, emails. And, and people typically are just really upset at one thing. They don't want to have a conversation, but they got to point a finger, right? You know, and so you end up taking that brunt. She gets fed up with that. So, you know, I can't say enough great things about her tolerance for this, but she's not happy. I'll say that.
It's amazing, and in fact, I'm in a somewhat related position being in media because I get a lot of that stuff, too.
Oh, I'm sure. And, yeah, I'm sure.
You know, I think it was Mike McGarry once told me, he said, "When people are going to tell you how great you are, don't believe it." He said, "People are going to tell you how awful you are, don't believe that either. You just stay in the middle, you're good."
Stay in the center lane.
That's what we try to do. Good one. So, all right, got to get a weather break in more with Bill Hauser, mayor of Leeds, and... conservative extraordinaire after we come back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
It's KDXU. We're on 890 on the AM, 92.5 and 106.5 on, or 106.1 on the FM. So we're all over the place. I think digital is 106.1.0, and then we have 1.1 is ESPN and 1.2 is Fox. Anyway, I'm not really a digital guy. I'm still working on all that. But thanks for tuning in. I'm Andy Griffin here live with Bill Hauser, mayor of Leeds, and a guy who is not afraid to speak his mind. I love that. Now, my mother is from New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Mother-in-law, rather, is from New Jersey. She's passed away now, but she was one of those that was never afraid to say what she was thinking, and it took some getting used to at first. There were a couple of times I'd go home and, you know, I wouldn't say anything to her, but I'd get home and I'd tell my wife, I'm like, I can't believe she said that.
Yeah.
And my wife said, look, if you just learn to accept the way she is... She's fine. She's a great woman. It's just she says things that other people wouldn't say. They would keep their tongue. Hold their tongue. And anyway, but I'm not saying you're rude at all, Bill. I'm just saying sometimes you need to say what you're thinking, right?
Well, you know, it brings up a good topic because I think there's so much animosity right now.
Yeah.
And there's kind of untethered dialogue and just, you know, you see the assaults on Tesla owners. Come on, most Tesla owners are not the conservatives, you know, but they're out to try and make this statement. We find out, I guess there's been sources identifying groups that are out to attack these that are being funded by certain woke groups.
George Soros is what my son keeps saying.
But. That's kind of the rumor. I don't know if it's true, but you know, what we've got is just unfortunately this... the society that has started, you know, it used to be just kind of the 5% fringe on each end of the bell curve, and that's kind of grown to 10 now. So, you know, it's starting in the home, but it's also being perpetuated because news has an agenda, a clickbait, like we saw with, you know, the land in Leeds. Well, the headline was very misleading, and all of the story was, but people want to click on that. They want some excitement and then something to talk about and something to point a finger at why their life isn't perfect. So, you know, I think we get this momentum of aggravation and, we're at a really pivotal time right now, you know, politically, socially, financially, all of the frustration that I think a lot of people are experiencing with Doge and what's happening there. I mean, my gosh, this was really crazy the last 4 years of what had been happening, but it's been going on for decades.
Yeah.
Trump was responsible for it too during 2016. And, you know, so what we have is we're going to have to correct the wrongs, and it's going to be painful, and we all have to, I think, get on the ship, if you will, the ark, and we have to kind of tread those treacherous waters and go through this time of making our country as a whole better with our neighbors. Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, there's people who will speak out and just kind of say, well, this is what I think. They won't have any substantiated facts to it, and they just want to vent. And then there's, you know, the people who actually do have some qualified arguments that want to have a dialogue and come to a resolution. And the two are separate. You know, the ones that want to come to a solution, let's have those dialogues. Let's have the conversation. But the ones who just want to vent, the keyboard warriors, the people that just want to hate, I really wish that there was something that they could, find another place they could find to put their energy that was more productive. It just doesn't solve anything for us. And so I'm disappointed in that, but I hope we get more people trying to get onto the same train of, we've got the opportunity from November to save this country. Now is when the work begins. We didn't save it in November by getting a conservative, transparent government in that wants to save, our tax dollars to get rid of the corruption. And so they tell us, right? But we've really got to all lean in and try to resolve this issue. And sometimes when it's not happening, we got to call it out. And I'll even call it out on my own party, on my own, you know.
That's good.
Yeah. And that's where you hear, you know, like, hey, Hoster's going to, you know, he's going to say something. But I will, because I want to make sure the truth is out there. I want to make sure that we're attacking the right things with the right transparency and making good progress.
There was a guy early in the morning on this station talking about bureaucracy versus DOGE and the paring down. And you said, you know, the thing is, DOGE is great, and we love what it's doing. However, you have to have some establishment. There's a reason there's administration and then politicians.
Yeah.
You've got to have that backbone to keep continuity. Where do you stand on all that?
You know, I have some very liberal and conservative friends who have asked me about this as well. And, you know, I understand Elon has also had this same challenge where, you know, he doesn't go in and actually write the notes to fire people, right? You know, so there's people who are reporting this, and they'll say, we got this problem, and what should we do? And in most circumstances, his response has not been to terminate people, but to find a bureaucratic means of resolving the situation, and then that's the last straw. But, you know, and so these things aren't happening. I think they need to happen. I do believe that, you know, the Department of Education being dissolved last week was on an executive order was fantastic, because the results have not been there. But what do we do? Do we just walk in and we can, you know, 80,000 people? No, I don't agree with that. I believe that there's got to be, okay, these states now have to carry this load. How do we make, we have the resources to try and make these transitions occur. And so there's some management that can, I think, be done there a little bit better. I'm not at the helm. So, you know, but that would be my criticism of it until I know more facts about it. I think the bureaucracy of trying to make these things more palatable is transparency. And that's, I think, the best answer to everything.
I have been criticized because maybe about 2-3 weeks ago on the show, I talked about, say there's a grant out there. A grant, that's a magic word for the feds are going to give you money.
And it's not growing on a tree. It's our money.
Right, our money. And there's a grant out there, and I'm going to use Washington County School District. They don't use a lot of grants, but they do use some. Says, hey, we're going to go for this grant because we have good numbers in whatever area they're looking for in this grant.
Right.
And then they have the press release and the press call. We got the grant from the feds. And I, you know, in my mind, I'm like, so you're going to the feds and saying, give me money, when you know that money is not magic money. That is money that, I mean, you're so sensitive. And again, I don't want to call it the school district because it's just an example. And you go in and you say, hey, we got this money, and it's federal money, and we don't have to pay it back, and this is great. It's going to improve this and this and this. And I said, look, you guys are adding to the problem. Mm-hmm. Not again specifically the school district, but whoever applies for that grant, you're adding to the problem. They're like, look, if we didn't go for that, someone else would.
Right.
And I said, yeah, but if enough people don't go for it, maybe that grant eventually goes away. And they're like, nah, it doesn't work that way. It'll always be there because people will always ask for it.
Well, you bring up a really great point in that those grants typically have strings attached to them that bureaucrats want to see happen.
That's true.
And they're bureaucrats who are beholden to big money, who want to see their businesses or their agendas executed.
Right, right.
And so those are very, very touchy things to be, you know, treading with, because I look at some of the grants that we get offered in the town, you know, and they have strings attached to them. And we have to be very careful about assessing what are those strings.
So basically, we'll give you this money if you'll do this.
Yes.
Is what you're talking about, strings attached.
And when you, I mean, let's use the school as an example, you know, the curriculums that they insist are associated with that grant being issued. And that's been going on for, you know, decades. No Child Left Behind was a big one, you know, where certain strings were attached to any funding that the states got from the feds. And it was really handcuffing the school districts and the states from being able to do their job. And my gosh, what are we at now? Like 38th in the world, you know, on our kids that are graduating.
Yeah.
And
I think we spend more money than anyone else, right?
And spend more money.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just horrible.
The joke was, honestly, this started maybe in the 80s, maybe in the 90s, but you bring a kid in from wherever, Korea or China or what, they're going to have, they're going to be the smart kids. They're going to be the, they brought them in because they're the smart kids. They're smarter than all us quote-unquote white kids or
Americans
kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden, you're going, wait, why?
Right, yeah.
Why? Why are they better at math than we are?
I think it's going to be an interesting shift in the country to bring this back to the states. There's a lot of things I think that should be coming back to the states as it was kind of intended originally. I know there was, you know, a lot of heat when that Constitution was built between Jefferson and Hamilton, and you know the efforts that were extended there. But we've let our federal government get so big lately that I think it's time to shift the tides and allow the states their opportunity. I don't know that it's going to be great. We really have to focus on getting good elected officials in office with transparency. And this brings me to one other point that's associated with the SEC, with the caucus system. And we're going to have a new, you know, a state chair election that's coming up. And that's going to be a very important election. I hope people look at all of the qualifications of each person who's running. One of the big things that happened in the state of Utah is this Senate Bill 54 that happened a while back that allows for
the signature one.
A signature.
Yeah.
Those signatures are expensive. They can be, you know, $15 a signature, $25 a signature, and you need several thousand, you know. So who's funding that?
And I was going to say they don't have to be, but that's the way that's what it's turned into.
That's what it's turned into. And we just had, you know, some fraud that was identified because some of them, you know, that's how they're getting paid. Well, obviously, you know, they're going to have a motivation to get fake signatures, right? So not the candidate, but the signature company.
And that is frustrating.
I want to point that out. So, you know, okay, so we have this SB 54. It's gone to the state Supreme Court. So it's legal. You know, in their interpretation of which we have to honor. So, but the problem is that these signature gatherers are bringing the signature to, anybody who's a registered Republican or whatnot and saying, hey, do you endorse this person or whatever? Not really kind of giving what is happening. And what's happening is this candidate did not get through caucus or may not get through caucus, which is the educated voters who have gone through and vetted all of the candidates. Instead, this person wants to buy their way onto the ballot. What does that mean? They're not beholden to you. They're beholden to the money that's paying for these signatures right now.
Right.
And so when we have those kinds of elected officials at the helm, we're just asking for more corruption because we can see already that they're enabled by big money influence. And so we have to have the general public really educated about what does that mean. Let's nullify SB 54 by educating the general public about those signatures are really a way for someone to get around an educated voter.
Well, and Bill, that would almost invalidate the caucus system if you start doing it that way.
So well said.
It makes it meaningless because... And in a way, it will motivate a candidate to why should I even bother with Cox? What's the point?
We kind of heard that from our governor. Yeah. Why should I even bother? Yeah.
He got a little angry. He got a little red.
He got really hot. Yeah. After 14 hours of us all sitting there. Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, a lineman supporter. I'm not getting on. I don't want to get into all that.
All I'm
saying is that's right now what the bill is. And, you know, you can be motivated to win the caucus and then lose anyway in the primary. And everybody says, well, that's what should have happened. Well, maybe it should, maybe it shouldn't. We'll never know, will we?
Well, yeah, you know, I'll use Trent Staggs and John Curtis as an example. You know, I like both people. I did support Trent Staggs. I'm very open mm-hmm. about that. And Trent won very well at the primary or at the caucus.
The caucus, yeah.
But John got signatures, and guess who won the general? Because
the guy with the money.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's sad to say, but none of us really have time to go out and vet all of these candidates. Some do, and they're the ones who join the caucus system, right? They're elected by their neighborhood to go out. You have the time to go out and vet those candidates. Will you do that for me? And so that's how the caucus system works. But us generals, you know, we're really, we have jobs, we've got kids, we've got other our religious obligations, what have it be, and we don't have time to go out and have the one-on-ones with the candidates and find out what is a qualifier, what's not, and bring that information back. And so all we do is we listen to social media or TV ads or something and then go make our decision. And that big money knows that, and that's why it works.
Sounds like that Cox and Curtis and others use the system that's in place, and they're somewhat to blame, but really the bill, HB 54, is what's really
SB 54, yes, sir. Yeah, that is the problem. That is what we need to resolve. And
got to fix that thing.
Legislatively, we can't do it. Judicially, we can't do it, but we can through education and letting people know what that's really doing. And if we can just educate, get people to understand by signing those signature ballots, you're enabling big money to come in and run our elections.
Well said. Got to get a commercial break in. More with Bill after this.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
I'm lucky man. Get to hang out with Bill Hoster today
I'm
on
the
Andy Griffin Show.
Andy. I'm the lucky
Bill
one.
Looking good. You know, Bill shows up in jeans and a button down. You look great, man. I was like, I was hoping you wouldn't show up in a suit or something to make me look bad.
Oh, my goodness. Come on. So, please.
Now, there is a BYU Sweet 16 game tonight. You're not a BYU guy, right?
You know, no. When I saw them win, I was just, my heart was so full. I was so good. I watched it absolutely. I want the Utah team to win. You know, that's what I want.
Yeah,
so.
Nice. I like that. Having been raised in media around sports stuff, I am first and foremost a BYU fan. I always have been, but I root for Utah. I root for Utah State. I root for Utah Tech or Dixie State or whatever they are. I root for SU. I've always been a pro Utah guy. I want them to do well, and I don't understand those people. And my mom was one of them. She passed away, but she hated Utah so bad.
Oh man,
like, Mom, why? And she's like, oh, they're so mean, and you know, whatever. But
I got to know Kyle pretty good up there. He, you know, just real competition. I love athletes. I love the spirit. My daughter was a D1 golf player. And
oh, really? Wow, nice.
Yeah, just seeing, you
Where
know,
did she play? Did she play at U?
No, she played for Idaho State.
Idaho State, okay.
Yeah.
Bengal, huh?
Yes, a Bengal. She went up there, and it was a great atmosphere to see these kids, you know, just give it their all.
Now, what did they do between November and March in Pocatello? Because it snows a lot up there.
It does. Yeah, they had indoor facilities.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, that they practiced in. It did affect them. I mean, you know, you could obviously see the kids coming in from Southern Cal that were, they'd been playing on grass
forever. Yeah,
yeah, and they had an advantage, especially on the greens. It mattered.
We kind of get that with probably golf, but also baseball down here. Our baseball teams are months ahead of the other teams.
Exactly, matters.
And especially the first part of the season, they just smoke them. Now, mm-hmm. later in the year, they start to get – but, I mean, if you live in somewhere like, say, Vernal –
Oh, right.
And you've got to play baseball playoffs in May, and there's still snow on the ground in May and Vernal sometimes. And yeah.
Well, it's interesting to see the Cardinals, right, come out of Arizona and go play in Minnesota.
That's true.
When the weather's turning and they're not used to this, trying to grab that ball with their cold hands. So,
yeah.
But no, it does matter. And, you know, I see these athletes that and we were kind of talking during the break, you know, when someone wants to, if they lose and they come out and they are just a poor loser, you know, that's just, I never really saw that in these college kids. You know, most of them were really disciplined. They're trying to, they still have to take all the tests and everything all the way along and keep their scholastic going, or they get kicked off the team. And so they're doing that on top of working out, on top of practicing, on top of competing. And they're really just an example, you know. And so I've seen athletes from all over the country do this, and I'm really impressed with that as a whole. I do want to see our Utah team always win, though, you know.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, that BYU game is at 5:09 tip. We'll have it for you here on KDXU around 4:30 or so with a pregame and then the live broadcast and some postgame. And we wish the Cougars best of luck.
Absolutely.
Play Alabama, which is, I think they finished second in the SEC. A very, very good basketball
team.
Yeah. But they have lost 5 out of their last 11 games. And I was like, oh, they're not doing so well. And then I looked, they swept Kentucky during that stretch. They beat Missouri one of those games. They beat Auburn one of those games. Like, so they've actually played some really good
teams.
So
the coach is kind of, he's sandbagging a little, you think?
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be. So, I didn't know your daughter was a golfer. Are you a golfer then? Are you pretty good?
Yeah. No, I used to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Now I'm old. Like, you know, it happens. But no, my daughter was great. She picked it up when I played all the time. And so she would start to come and play. And then
that's how she started. Huh?
It's how she started. And, you know, and then there was the rumor that, oh, you get, there's so many golf scholarships for girls, you know. And by the way, that's not true. So
she had found out the hard way.
Yeah. She had to really compete for that. And, you know, but, it was great. She chose to go to ISU. She had several offers, but it was the coach that was up there at the time. And, the relationship was great because he knew that they weren't going pro. You know, he was like, you're here to go to medical school or go to law school or whatever,
right.
You know, and play golf along the way, you know. And so that was the atmosphere, which was great. She graduated a couple of years ago and just gave us our first grandbaby a couple months ago.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, we're so excited for Lander to be part of our family. But
and where does she live now?
She's living in Pleasant Grove. Okay. So a few hours away. It's hard, you know, we're driving a bunch, but
wearing out the I-15. I
yes,
know how it is.
Yes.
That's where my grandbabies are, up in Taylorsville.
Oh, you know the routine. Yeah. Yes. And you just love to be with them. But it's good.
Now, congratulations on that, Grandpa Bill.
Yeah, first one. We're thrilled.
Yeah, my number two son, it's his birthday today, by the way. He's 30, but he had twins, and then 3 years later, they had twins again.
Oh, my
God. So they have had 4 kids in 3 years.
That is awesome. Wow.
And then my number three son has 1 child, too, so I've got 5 right now.
It's a whole new chapter, isn't it?
It is.
It is great.
Makes me feel old, but...
Are they athletic, too, or are they getting...
I don't know.
You're a pretty athletic guy.
You know, my most athletic son was my number two son. He didn't play any sports because he discovered girls at a very young age.
Oh, man.
Well, and was really into girls. I mean, really.
Aren't the girls into the athletes, though?
I don't know. He just got chasing girls around. And I remember the coach of the football team at the time, he had him in PE class, and he would come to me. He's like, you got to talk your son into coming and play football. And I'm like, I tried, man. I would love nothing more than my son to play football for you. And he says, I see him out there, and he's dominating in PE classes, and he's fast, and he's all these things. And I said,
I'm sure.
I'm sorry. I'll do what I can. He plays in the band, and he chases girls. And those are the two things that he does.
I was amazed to see some of the kids who just didn't look athletic, you know, especially like in golf and that. But, man, their heart was there. Yeah. And it made such a difference. So, yeah, they've got to have that. They've got to have that to win.
Sure. Yep. Bill, anything else? We got about 30 seconds that you wanted to get to before we let you go.
No, I'm so grateful to be here, and I'm grateful for all you do for this community and bringing out what's happening in different areas. And I think it's important for people to know. So I'm grateful for what you do, Andy.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate you, man.
Appreciate you, brother.
Good friend of mine, Bill Hoster, mayor of Leeds. We're out of time. I'll be back tomorrow. Open lines with Mello. Talk to you then.